Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele. Thanks to Scarecrow, your local kitchen, florist and grocer. Go to scarecrow.co.nz.
Hello, Baz McDonald, are you there?
Kia ora, team.
G'day, mate, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, thanks for stepping in for Rita tonight and sort of taking us through your recent adventure, which seems to have been kind of a somber one.
Yeah, somber at times, but also it was amazing to get to travel the country and see so many different parts of Aotearoa, speak to so many different fascinating people about their perspective on what sustainability will look like for our country. It was, you know, definitely some hard moments, but some really amazing moments as well.
Nice one. Hey, can I just read a paragraph that I've just seen on your spin-off article, just to set the tone?
Sure.
The landscape of Southland has looked increasingly foreign to me. My memory was diverse green pastures, some dotted with white sheep, others lined with row upon row of vegetables. That diversity has been replaced with the sickly smell of sillage and shit coming from paddocks packed with dairy cows. Damn it. So... kind of, it lost its charms on some of the drives, has it?
That's silage, just
oh, silage, right, of course.
Silage. I was going to say it's still very charming, and Southland, of course, still has its charms, but they are plains, you know. Southland is a great plain, and so when the diversity of it is paddock to paddock, if it has no diversity... Yeah, I guess it has lost of its charm that it had to me growing up. And it's particularly difficult to go there this time of year. Southland has real problems with what's called mud pugging, because Southland, a lot of people don't know this, but Southland used to be one great wetland,
right.
Like pretty much from Invercargill right up north was giant wetland. And so the ground is constantly trying to reclaim itself into that state, and so it gets quite loamy, quite muddy, and when it is this wet this time of year and you have such heavy cows on it, they can just trot it to absolute mud.
So I can imagine, yeah.
It's particularly difficult to go south on this time of year these days.
So you've actually put together a 6-part doco investigating the dairy industry in New Zealand, which is up on TVNZ On Demand and Renews. It's called Milk and Money. How did you start this journey?
So I guess, you know, dairy's always played a part in my life because, you know, my extended family work in the dairy industry, my immediate family have roles in the larger industry. And so obviously it's always played a part, but I sort of clocking as I was growing up, these changes that I was seeing. And, you know, in parts of the country, Waikato and Taranaki, they're kind of being more traditional dairy places. And so for a lot of people... this dairy boom wasn't quite as apparent.
But yeah, totally, man. Because that's where I would drive through, and I can just always... It's always just smelled like cow shit around there. And that's kind of like my general driving around sort of area, you know, like, well, down to Hamilton, sort of.
I mean, even in those places, if you'd looked really closely, you would have seen some pretty substantial changes happening, but more in how many cows there were in each paddock. And
right.
If you'd looked even closer, the differences would have been in, like, you know, how they're treating the soils, how they're keeping those animals fed. Whereas in Southland and Canterbury, you know, I say in that article that when I was born, there was 30,000 dairy cows in all of Southland, and now there's over 600,000.
Wow.
And so,
So actually that old stigma of we had all the sheep is kind of changing to we've got all the cows a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically. I mean, in the 1980s, there were 70 million sheep in the country, and now there's only about 26 million, and essentially we've traded all of that space, a lot of it has been traded for space for dairy.
Now, with your adventures traveling around the country, what have been the main impacts that you've seen dairy industry? What's been the main toll that it's starting to take on New Zealand?
Well, I mean, water is the issue that a lot of Kiwis care most about. It's the one that they see most apparently. We have a real connection, obviously, to our water, whether it's just casually going for your summer swim or whether it's just enjoying the view of it as you drive through the countryside or, you know, and for a lot of Māori, it has a deep cultural connection as well. And it's really hard to see our water degrading. And then probably one that's less visually apparent is our atmosphere. It's kind of hard to get your head around how burping and farting cows can contribute so much to our emissions, but dairy cows actually contribute a quarter of all the emissions we produce in the country, which is actually more than our cars.
More than cars.
That's crazy.
More than cars.
So we should be riding cows around, clearly.
I don't think they'd like that.
We don't give a shit what the cow likes. I don't know if you'd notice, but...
that's true. I mean, it's hard. You know, I've spent a lot of time on dairy farms. That's actually the third tier, is the animals. You know, the animals are such an impact that we have a bit of a disconnect from, you know, whether you're a consumer drinking dairy, there's a bit of a disconnect about what milk is, you know, a nutrient-rich liquid that's produced for its babies. But even on the farms, you know, in my experience, you know, there's been some awful cases of animal abuse in the dairy industry, but my experience by and large is that all the dairy farmers I know, all the dairy farmers that I've encountered, like, have a real deep connection with their cows.
Interesting,
but
right.
That doesn't take away the fact that the industry as a structure introduces inherent issues of animal treatment, whether that be that 2 million baby calves are killed every year in the dairy industry. These are bobbies. You might have heard the phrase bobbies before.
Yes, bobby veal.
Bobbies are calves produced by the dairy industry that have no economic value. And so an economic value would be that they're going to be raised to be milking cows if they're a female, or an economic value might be that you have a farm you work with who will raise it for beef. But a bobby is a calf, either male or female, that doesn't have that value of being raised. And so within days or weeks of being born, those bobbies are killed either on farm, about 200,000 are killed on farm every year, or about 1.8 million every year who are sent to meat processing works, primarily pet food. Well, not primarily, I'm not sure if it's primarily, but there's a large contingent that are pet food.
And obviously, this is all bottom line pushed, right? I mean, people keep just wanting to make a little bit more, and then you keep kind of like, oh, we found a more efficient way to do this. Oh, shit, look how fast we can make the grass grow if we spray this weird shit on it. Sweet, well, there's no turning back now. We have to spray this other shit because the grass has a pimple on it. Oh, crap. You know, like, it just, I can imagine that's kind of how it's, we've kind of gone away from that natural replenishing zone, and we're pushed into this kind of sort of cosmic, like, getting the most out of every little square inch of land type American aspect.
It's certainly not as bad as America. Like, I think it's
good for us. That's where we're headed, right? Surely. That's the zone, right?
It's certainly worth thinking that way.
Yeah.
I think there's this tendency in New Zealand's dairy industry in particular to sort of say, like, oh, but we do everything so much better than X, Y, and Z. And I don't think that's good enough.
Theirs is so shit.
So we're certainly not as bad as America. I think one of the real benefits of the New Zealand dairy industry is that we are still pasture-based. And in America, the cows are housed. They spend most of their life indoors, and they're fed from a trough. That's clearly, I think, something that New Zealanders would wholesale reject. And actually, there has been a growing number of housed cows in New Zealand, particularly in Canterbury, over the past couple of years. But by and large, that's not what our industry does. So, we should hold on to that. But then we should also expect that whatever version of agriculture we do is the best, most ethical, most sustainable version of it possible. And the trajectory of how we're doing things just doesn't seem to be indicating that. And as you say, the real marker, like the real underpinning thing, is the capital drive for growth, the capital drive for more.
Right.
And the way we've achieved that is, as you say, through inputs. We've applied more water, we've applied more fertilizer, we've imported more feed, and we've bolstered the number of cows that we can have in New Zealand through these artificial inputs. And if you push any system beyond its natural capacity, there's inherently going to be downward trajectories on some of these things. So,
where I'm coming from is where a lot of our stuff that we produce is going offshore, and if we're competing with an offshore market, you know, you start trying to cut costs because you're in competition with the whole world at that point. So if you're not doing something that someone's doing over there, you know, and if it doesn't matter to someone that's buying the meat, if it's, you know, oh, it's got this label on it that it does this, that, the other, it doesn't, you know what I mean? You just end up kind of competing on a scale where we shouldn't be competing on. Like, if we were actually supplying mostly for our people, I'm sure we could be a lot more sustainable about it. But
oh, absolutely. I mean, only 5% of what our dairy industry produces is consumed in New Zealand.
See, that's fucking cooked. That's cooked, man.
95% of it is exported. And that's another thing, you know, like, advertising in New Zealand and abroad has kind of convinced us that when what our dairy industry does is a wholesome glass of milk with perspiration dripping off the side and happy daisy cow that it was produced from and handed straight to you in your kitchen.
But and the cow's called Daisy as well. No, yeah,
the truth is most of what our dairy industry produces is some form of powdered milk. And some of that is like really valuable. You know, like infant formula, for instance, obviously has a really important part of our modern world. But then the majority of that powdered milk is just used in the manufacture of processed foods like muesli bars and stuff like that. So it's worth considering that this rhetoric of feeding the world is
I'm curious, actually, if we know what the percentages that we're actually contributing to the world with our 95%, I mean, would we be sorely missed in the worldwide market if we just pulled out?
Things have been in flux in the last couple of years, and I'll tell you why. So Fonterra was formed in 2001, and our government actually changed the law so that Fonterra could be founded, because essentially what they were going to create was a monopoly. And it was the Labour government that did that. It was Helen Clark's government that made this decision. They had a moment where New Zealand needed to decide what the economic future of the country would be, and they doubled down on milk, which I think we probably look back on, well, many people probably look back on now and aren't so sure about. But anyway, we doubled down on milk with Fonterra, and Fonterra had this ambition. They were going to be like the Google of milk. Like, when people around the world thought milk, they were going to think Fonterra. But the thing is that we're a really small nation, and even when we put as many cows in the country as possible, I can't tell you what the exact stat was, but we were still a very small portion of milk production.
Right.
And so they went offshore and they bought up milk production in China and South America and Australia, and they really tried to turn themselves into a multinational dairy conglomerate. Conglomerate's not the right word, is it? Because that's many businesses. Anyway, like a multinational company. And then in 2018, a bunch of them started just failing off, and they lost about I think it's like $800 million in selling off failing assets, and they had to pull themselves back home. And so that's why I say it looks very different now, and I can't tell you what the numbers are, because they've had to pull in their whole operation into just focusing on New Zealand. And that's why this documentary is kind of coming at a key time, because Fonterra and our dairy industry is at a turning point right now where they're having to decide what the economic and environmental future for the company is. When they can't be this Google of milk, this multinational organization. And so that's why, as a country now, we need to be having conversations, telling them what our vision for the future is that is sustainable, not only for our environment, but also for our economy and for the health of our rural communities, because the dairy industry plays a really significant part in rural communities. I mean, in Southland, where I grew up, 1 in 5 jobs is in the dairy industry.
Now, where can people go to find out a bit more about this and or get clued up on this conversation and also take part in this conversation?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can watch all 6 episodes now. So there's 6 20-minute episodes, and they kind of hopefully will give you like a 101 on what the industry is, what its impacts are, and what the barriers are to fixing them. And so we look at a whole range of things. The first episode is on the history of the industry and money, but then we look at water, we look at feed and fertilizer, we look at emissions, we look at soil and land, we look at milk and animals. So those are the 6 20-minute episodes. So you can watch them on TVNZ On Demand and the ReNews website now. And then over the next 6 weeks, we're also going to be rolling out sort of companion articles where we look at different aspects of these conversations a little more in depth. For instance, I mentioned the bobbies earlier. I have a whole piece about how there might be a future for the dairy industry where there's no bobbies at all, where we literally have a dairy industry where every life produced as a byproduct of that industry gets a chance at life. So these are the kinds of conversations on a smaller scale we can be having, where we're not just saying to the industry and farmers generally, like, we want you to be more sustainable, be more ethical, like, really action-driven directions that we can go.
I think it's more a case of, hey, be a farmer, but just do this other thing. Like, diversify your shit, bro. You know?
Yeah, there's definitely conversations about diversification and stuff in there. It's interesting. When the groundswell protest happened, 2 weeks before we were releasing this doco, everyone kind of said to me, like, oh, what amazing timing. Like, oh, you know, there's these protests right now where farmers are saying we've had enough and you're just about to release a series saying this is how you can do better. I think it is good timing in that there's a lot of attention on ag, but my intention with the series was always to start a conversation between all parts of New Zealand and, like, try and get everyday New Zealanders to understand the industry enough to have those conversations with farmers, where in the past they would have said, like, why should we listen to you? You don't know what you're talking about. But I worry now, post-groundswell, that perhaps parts of the farming community, and I say parts because there's been some farmers who have said to me, like, oh, that doesn't represent us, they're a vocal minority, but still there's a tenor right now where perhaps some parts of the farm community might not be in the best position to be listening, to be having an open dialogue about what a progressive, sustainable, ethical way forward might be. But I really hope that we're in a position to do that, because really it's what we need to do.
Well, that's why we've got this segment, mate, and we really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat. Baz McDonald, also that last name is too fucking great for this whole situation. can also shout out the cow on your spin-off story that's just making full eye contact with the camera and taking a shit at the same time.
Taking a shit.
Fuck, it's crazy. I was just like, oh, it sucks how they literally shit where they eat as well. Like, just...
Can I tell you one little thing about cow shit that
yes,
I think everyone I've told to has, like, really changed, opened their mind.
Makes a great frisbee when it's dry.
Okay.
Magic mushrooms grow out of them?
Describe to me what a cow shitting looks like.
It's like a running fountain of...
It's like bullets coming out of his butt.
Yeah. Well, so like that picture you're talking about, yeah. And quite often people think of cow shit as like a stream, watery, diarrhea stream. So the thing is that it's quite interesting to go to a dairy farm and see there's only one time in the year when dairy cows aren't milking, and that's when they're just about to give birth. And when they stop producing milk, they stop having diarrhea. They have hard... Well, they're not hard, but, they have substantial poos again. Mm. And that's because...
Don't say
producing milk is so energy intensive,
right,
that a cow has constant diarrhea.
Oh,
that's just another way to think about, like, how we're pushing the system that our cows have constant diarrhea.
Imagine that. You've got four stomachs and they've all got diarrhea like that.
It's bad enough with one.
Fucking sucks. Hey, Baz, you're a legend, man. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Sustaining Alive on 95BFM. Thanks to Scarecrow, your local kitchen, florist, and grocer. Go to scarecrow.co.nz.